On your marks, set, pod. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Great British Bake Off podcast. My name is Haley Strong, and I'm here with a couple of sweet treats here today. Emily Fox, what's up?
Hey, how are you?
I'm swell, per usual.
Are you feeling sweet as well?
I'm always feeling sweet. So much so, I should probably go to the dentist.
Oh, no, that's not good.
Kurt Clark, what's up?
Konnichiwa, Haley.
My Japanese is abysmal. As I kind of think maybe the Great British Bake Off's Japanese is kind of abysmal, too.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that.
We'll get into that. And we're joined by a very special guest today. We're excited. Hope you're excited. We're joined by Tina Zaccardi, winner of the Great American Baking Show Season 4. Tina, yeah. How are you doing?
Hey, guys. I'm so happy to be here. This is great.
We're so excited to have you. Yes. You know, somebody who's stared into the deep blue sea eyes of Paul Hollywood herself.
Oh, yes. Many, many times.
Did you receive a Paul Hollywood handshake on your season?
Yes, I did.
Yes, I did.
Have you washed that hand since?
No, I haven't. And it's been almost 2 years now.
Good. Was it as magical as everyone says?
Yes, it was. Total surprise.
Good.
Does he have a firm handshake?
Yes, he does. Good. Very firm handshake. Good. Very deliberate. Yes.
Good. I'd be very worried if he had like a dead cold fish handshake.
No.
Like, ugh. Thank you. Good.
And did you guys film in the UK?
Yes, we did. We filmed in the UK. We had to go over there and we were there for about 3.5, almost 4 weeks.
So I'm kind of thinking that maybe the setup that they're doing right now is more similar to what you guys did, where like you obviously couldn't go home every weekend. That would be a long flight. Did you guys have like a practice baking tent and everything?
We didn't have a practice baking tent, but in the hotel where we stayed, everyone was in like their own apartment style room. So we had a kitchen there and they gave us all the tools we needed to be able to practice. So we did.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah. Okay. So it's not like they've never done anything like this before. Yeah. And like, is it the same similar production teams?
It is the same production team. There is, so what happened was you probably have like half from the British contingent and half from the United States, and they come over and they are part of the crew that's on there. And, normally the British show is they film on the weekends and then they go home. So they go back to their normal lives. They can practice all week long. I think they filmed it more like we do, where we're filming for 2 days and then we have a day or two off and then we film for 2 more days and so on.
That's a pretty grueling schedule that you guys are subjected to, huh?
It is a pretty grueling schedule. I mean, you're in a foreign country, you know, you're staying in unfamiliar surroundings, but you get to be very fast friends with the other contestants. So they're kind of like your support and lifeline.
But you're hitting Celsius on everything. How did that feel?
You know, when we handed in our recipes, we had to have Celsius as well as Fahrenheit. And okay. They do have a conversion card for you and they show you how to use the ovens and everything. So they make it, you know, easy for you.
So are we missing out on an oven that has the door that slides underneath? Because I keep thinking about that for New York City apartments and I'm really mad that it hasn't caught on here.
I have to tell you. I absolutely loved that oven. And you can't get it here. You know, I'm going to maybe be redoing my kitchen soon. And I was like, oh, wouldn't that be cool if I could get that oven? And you can't get it. The closest place is Canada. And I don't even know if you can get one here or have an electrician put it in or what the requirements of that is. But yeah, it's a really cool oven. You're not reaching over the door, you know?
Right. Yeah, like it seems like a no-brainer for anybody who has a small kitchen, and that basically translates to virtually any place in the world. So why isn't that happening? I don't get it.
I don't know. They've got to get them here.
Yeah, they do.
It's great that we have you, because I think there's a lot of things that we've been, like questions on production and just assumptions about how the show runs. And so it's, you know, thank you for joining us. And
absolutely.
Yeah, it's, and although it is for, it was an interesting week, Japanese, like that, you had nothing like this, like a Japanese week on your season.
No, everything was traditional bakes that we had heard of before. Nothing really strange or out there.
Yeah, because first week you guys did cake, second pastry, episode 3 was cookies, episode 4 was bread, episode 5 was your semifinal, and then obviously the final came after that. So yeah, it was very much like the things you expect to see in a regular bake-off season. It's always interesting, and I use the term interesting loosely, when they base an entire week off of, you know, a culture or whatever. And I would say the last time we did that was in Danish Week a couple seasons ago. But I would say that was different because we had Sandy there, who is an actual Danish person and who spoke the language and knew all of the bakes and understood what they're for and could kind of give that context to the audience. We did not have that this week. And it felt clunky. And I think clunky is the nicest way to put it. I think last week when we were talking about the prospects of this week, we were all a little nervous, and I don't think the show did anything to ease those nerves. We start with a signature challenge, which is eat soft and delicious steam bun, sweet or savory. Emily, you have been to Japan. Did you have steam buns there?
So you can buy them out of like a kiosk at like a Lawson's, which is highly recommended sort of corner store on literally every corner in Tokyo and other cities around. Josh and I often went to these Lawson's and in like 7-Eleven type places just to get breakfast and stuff. So I would always get like an onigiri or some sort of rice ball, delicious breakfast piece. And like Josh got a steamed bun or two there, but like that is not really something you're going to see as like a traditional Japanese style. I think I associate steamed buns with dim sum, which is Chinese.
Yeah,
so. I did some light research and very, very light.
What? Wait, what?
I know. Can you believe it? That is so out of character
to this podcast.
Just barely. Like, I Googled this about like 3 minutes before you sent us the link. Mm-hmm. So I looked it up, and a Japanese steam bun is called a nukumen. But it's the Japanese name for a Chinese baozi. So like, but there's their steam buns. So realistically, this is a Chinese dish in Japanese week, which feels tacky.
Yeah.
Again, the lightest word
on there too. And
like,
then
how did they not catch that?
Yeah. It's not great. It's not a great vibe. Yeah. Not a great look for that. You know, and I feel like maybe the other challenges weren't super actual Japanese, and they're like
they were more inspired, I think. They're not, it was a broader, more, I think it was more inspired than an actual,
like this kawaii cake. I would have loved to see the cute cartoon cake done during cake week or something like that. To do it here, just kind of, I don't know, like, again, I'm not an expert in Japanese culture, not gonna pretend to be.
Nope.
It just didn't feel super great.
The one thing for me, the I'm sure we'll get to the technical challenge. That to me felt the closest in, not just because of the matcha, but like the when I was living in Chicago, there was one of those rotary conveyor belt sushi places, and so you have the sushi coming by you on the conveyor belt, but then they had like they would have a meal crepe cake. You know, as part of that. So that's been so part of, so at least there in my mind is that association with Japanese in terms of that style of cake. That's the only place I've ever actually seen it has been in a sushi restaurant. So, but yeah, as a big, like we talked a little bit last week during the Cornish pasty challenge, how like every culture kind of has these kind of savory pockets, a dumpling type, whether it's the empanada the pasta, the
or
pasty.
A calzone, or
exactly. And so bao, or these steamed dumplings or buns were kind of like one of the things that I've been thinking of. I was I liked the challenge. It was just the associate. It was more the week that I had issue with than the challenges themselves. It's like, I would have been all over several of these different Steam funds. Like, don't get me wrong.
Yeah. Like if they were in a different week that wasn't like, let's talk about Japanese baking. Yeah. Like, you know, like I feel like all of these challenges I thought were good and fun and successful when it's not placed
the steamed buns could have been a signature for Bread Week because Bro did say we're focusing on the texture of the bun, not so much the filling, but did you do a good bun?
Yeah, and like that was a yeasted bun, right? So
yes,
I think it was a real missed opportunity, and I kind of thought back to how I rattled off some of like the Japanese flavors I like off the top of my head at the end of the podcast last week. And it's like they literally just like went for that rather than doing a little more in-depth research as to, you know, I don't know, use buckwheat, work with rice flour, do something that's like at least a little bit closer to the actual culture. And I'm not an expert either. Let's just put that out there. I've been to Japan twice. I love it there. It's such a diverse and interesting food culture. And I feel like it was just the easy grasp of like matcha and like throw in some yuzu here, like cherry blossoms and put a geisha on a cake. I was like,
right
about that.
I
could have been more.
I will say though, because it's a signature challenge from my perspective, it was when you say signature, it's like something that's, I guess, near and dear to you or what's a favorite of yours. So I was okay with the fillings, you know, like embracing the hamburger. I thought that was a brilliant, like, use of that, you know, make it, you know, like a burger. So as far as the fillings, I thought they give the contestants a lot of leeway to do, like, to put your twist on it. So that's what the signature challenge really means. So
who would have expected double gherkins, huh?
Oh, yeah.
Like not one, but two gherkins.
And even the, like, you know, tying this back to Top Chef, you never see, like, what are the things that, like, we know the things that Tom doesn't like.
He doesn't like okra.
But he's never going to say, don't make something with okra, or the serving that you give me, can you go light on the okra or have no okra? It's like, I was very surprised, and to see Paul Hollywood say, I wouldn't eat that. Like, unless, I thought first it was going to be an allergy thing. He's like, no, I just don't like gherkins. I'm like, man up, Paul. Come on.
Well, he'll tell you if, like, when you say, well, what are you making for us today? You know, he goes to your bench, and if he likes, he'll say, oh, that's my favorite. He did that to me and really put the pressure on me for one of the bakes. But I guess he'll, you know, say he doesn't, he'll tell you when he doesn't like something. So, but it's a more, I think between Top Chef and this, it's a more relaxed, friendly atmosphere where he could say, and they were like, yeah, we'll leave it out of one of them, and people weren't so far in the process that they couldn't, so it was okay.
That would be horrible if you were halfway through, like half the time had elapsed and like you forgot to mention, like, you know God forbid somebody forgot to mention that there were gherkins in there, and like it surprised, like. So
I will say I was a little annoyed with Paul with both of the burger ones, to say the hamburger was dry, but it's because the full thing, you didn't have the full thing, and having those gherkins or the gherkin relish in it would have really made a difference to the dryness.
The moisture to it.
I like that Lottie pointed that out too.
I love that she's like, I wasn't gonna say that to his face, but
so maybe you have the relish with that, Paul.
She pulls no punches, Lottie.
She's great.
Who are you liking this season, Tina? Who's your favorite?
Honestly, I am loving every single one of them. You know, usually but every single one of them. I was, you know, I don't want to get too far, but it was a little disappointing this week. But I mean, I love Laura. I can't really pick one. I just love them all. I think they all have their own unique personality. Everybody is so different. So there's just something to love about everybody.
I had a dream about Laura earlier in the week, and I was like, oh no, it means she's going to go home.
The episode kind of made it feel like that too.
Right? Well, with the editing, they kind of try and lead you down a path that maybe right or maybe wrong. You don't know.
Well, I felt maybe this week the editing was a little heavy handed on the person who did go home. And like, if you're listening to this podcast and you're this far in and you don't know who goes home, one of the Marks went home, young Mark.
And I was so disappointed. I loved him.
I was devastated. And, you know, Ethan, my husband, Mark was his favorite, probably one of his favorite in years, too. And at the beginning of the episode, when he didn't have a great steam bun challenge, and Ethan noticed how many confessionals he was getting, he just looked at me. He's like, "Do you think Mark's going?"
Well, that's the thing with the confessionals. It's either they have you do one if you do really bad, mm-hmm. or if you do really good. So,
yeah. Oh, that was heartbreaking, especially because I feel like he and Lottie are like really close, good friends on the show. So to have her, okay, spoiler guys, win our Baker, and then to turn around and be like, "And Mark, please,
and Mark,
like,
you're gone.
No, yeah.
I know."
I like the dueling burger bow, burger bun.
Yeah, that was cute.
Elements of it, and they kind of like looking at each other, and it's one of those things where it's interesting. It's like a lot of time on Top Chef, we talk about how, you know, if you're making a dish, the chefs don't like when they find out a competitor is making a dish very similar to theirs, because it forces the judges to kind of, you know, one is immediately going to be a higher rank than the other just because they're the same dish for all intents and purposes. So you had, but I liked Lottie's little assembly line of put the burger on, put the cheese on, put the relish on, except for not for Paul's.
And hers was so cute when you cut it open. It just looked like a burger.
It looked like a burger.
I would have liked to try that. Know what? I probably, very few challenges where I feel like I'd want to try all of them. But I think I would. I will say I found it pretty dark that Peter's lamb steam buns shaped like a lamb was stuffed with lamb.
And the pig ones too.
And the pork and the pig was stuffed with pork belly.
I get it, but I'm like,
I thought his was adorable. The fact that he had the one black sheet for the family.
Yeah, that was
brilliant. That was great.
That was for his brother. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
It would actually kind of been fun to have like the little chicky ones and the lamb ones and the pig ones all together in like one farm tableau. Or at least a showstopper challenge down the road where it's like, make a food that represents the stuffing in that food. So it's very off-putting.
It was cute. I think like, regardless of what we've already stated about Japanese Week being kind of controversial, I do think that a lot of the contestants managed to capture a lot of the kitsch around Japanese culture and the cuteness factor of, you know, some of these bakes. So I thought that was kind of a fun process to see. But I think with the technical challenge, woof, some of these didn't look so great. And why doesn't anyone know what a crescent is? Right over your head? I don't know.
And I was like, you know, I looked over to Ethan. I was like, you know what a crescent is, right? It's like a crescent. It's a crescent.
Like a crescent moon, it's a crescent roll.
A crescent
roll, crescent rolls.
Yeah. So that was a little surprising to me.
Yeah.
What did you guys think of this?
You know, when you hear crepe, the first thing you think of is French. But then with the addition of the matcha, I started, okay, I'm okay with Japanese inspired. Which is, I think what, because I mean, honestly, I know that, you know, crepes are traditionally French, and I don't know how the crepe cake came to be. Was it something that came out of France, or was it something that we did here in the United States? Let's stack the crepes with frosting in the middle.
That sounds uniquely American, doesn't it?
Exactly.
Hermine did mention in the beginning of the episode that a lot of Japanese baking has French elements to it. So I don't know if that's part of it. Again, I didn't do... I should have done more research. Of course, I'm never going to. Sorry, everyone. I didn't really look into that much. So I just kind of took her word for it. And that's maybe how I connected the two. And I was like, oh, well, this is probably what Hermine was talking about. Again, I'm an idiot. I don't know what I'm talking about. So.
No, I mean, I think that like we've seen like a millefeuille pastry where things are stacked and layered, right? So crepe, doing that with crepes is like the same thing. I've actually seen a crepe cake like that before with matcha on it at a bakery that's in our neighborhood. So I don't know. Is it sort of Japanese inspired and more prevalent than we've realized? I don't know. But putting fondant over it was a new thing that I hadn't seen.
Did they put fondant over it?
It was just a crate. No, it was an extra big crate.
Oh, was it? Oh, okay. Sorry, guys.
And that's the other thing. I've never seen a crepe cake wrapped like that. I've always seen the layers exposed.
Exactly. Same with me. Okay. Oh, wait. I was thinking about the fondant for the final.
Oh, the final.
That really stressed me out. No, but I think, wrapping it in a larger crepe, I think, threw everybody. And that was sort of the final, clincher for a few people who were like, oh, I don't know what a crescent is. I'm going to try to tuck this around. This doesn't look so great. Oh, gosh. What am I doing? So...
According to the interwebs, the birthplace of meal crepes is Japan.
It is.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was inspired by French crepes, but the meal crepe cake is associated with Japan.
Super.
Sometimes the Japanese name is believed to come from milk crepes due to the phonetic okay, we're going down the rabbit hole.
From a competitor perspective, I like the fact that they actually wrap them, because then you didn't have to be so precise in how big and make sure that all your crepes were the same so they'd stack up and not be all wonky. So that was an interesting thing. Yeah, I've never seen that before.
I liked Laura's comments I don't like to make desserts that taste like a swamp. I'm not the biggest. I mean, matcha, I'm okay with. I've not had a matcha dessert. We think we saw it with Sura a couple weeks ago, where there was some dish that was being made that this is just not something I enjoy at all. Eating
the
this.
Marzipan.
So it was, and then I love also those moments where because they don't know what the technical is, Dave ends up doubling down on matcha in his recipes.
I kind of felt bad for him, where he was like, again.
Yeah. And no mango, except for the cold open, where we had Matt with a big mango on his head.
I was at that at the beginning.
Yeah.
I will say, I think because of the sweetness of the white chocolate, ganache in the layers with the strawberries, I think that high sweetness would have been able to balance out the grassiness of the matcha in a really nice way.
That's what I'm like,
And I love a matcha latte with the milk in it. I think having that milky kind of texture and maybe a little bit of flavors would really balance it out in a nice way. I would try this. This is something I'm very interested in trying. Yeah. Tina, I want to hear everything about technicals. Are they horrifying? Okay. They would scare the shit out of me, Frank.
They are. So we would sit around and kind of brainstorm, could it be this? Could it be that? And we never got it right. There was no way of knowing, because there was one for the, for Bread Week. It was a Swedish kind of cinnamon roll, kind of Brady looking thing called a cannelang. Now, honestly, it was when you got into the challenge, it was kind of making a cinnamon roll. So we're like, oh, okay. Yeah, we could do this. But when they tell you you're making a cannelang, you're like, what the hell is that? It's but you go into it totally blind. We had, I think boxes covering ours, all the utensils and whatever the recipe we needed. And, a couple of things I had made, we had to do was a flourless chocolate cake with a French meringue. So I was okay with that. The second one was a tart to tan, but a savory one where you caramelize the apples, or in our case, shallots in a pan. You put puff pastry over it. When it comes out of the oven, you flip it over. The third one was Florentine cookies. The fourth one was the cannelang. Semifinals was a princess cake, and the finals was a bomb cooking.
The princess cake. It was one of the. I'm trying. Was that the season or the one season I saw? Was that the season five or
season four? I was in season four, and that's when we did the princess cake. And
British version. Did we see the princess cake this season? Was this this season, or was it the one season I saw?
I'm not sure. We didn't see it this season. Maybe
it was series.
It was a couple of seasons back.
Are you shaking when you read the directions? And
you kind of are, because some of them. So some of them, like the flourless chocolate cake with the meringue, it says make a French meringue. So there's three or four different ways to make a meringue. So if you don't know how to make a French one, then you're kind of okay.
Yeah, I think we saw that with Lottie. We saw that with Lottie today, whereas what she was asked to make, was it a Swiss meringue even with Lottie? There was something that she was asked to make and she wasn't sure exactly how to
make it. It was a Swiss meringue, which is interesting that you should mention that, because I make my Swiss meringue very differently from the way they made it. The steps were a little bit different.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
I guess, yeah, to that point, from the way the instructions for the technical were written for your season, are they kind of written through the lens of like more Americanized cooking techniques, or to like, and this is just me not coming from a place of lack of knowledge, is like, to your point, is there a different way to like make a meringue in the States versus in the UK or anything like that? Like, were the technical challenges written through the lens of a UK staff member or chef or baker, or through the lens of more of an Americanized view for your season?
Making a meringue is universal. The only thing with the Swiss meringue buttercream this week was the technique was the same. You warm up the sugar and the egg whites until the sugar is dissolved. The only difference is they whip the butter first and added the meringue to the butter. What I usually do is I whip the meringue and then add softened butter to the meringue. It was just a flip-flop of technique. But like a French meringue, it's that's universal. When you say French meringue, it's universal. It's not cooked. You just whip up the sugar and the egg whites. A Swiss meringue, you heat them. And an Italian meringue is you make a sugar syrup and you add them to the egg whites. So, but no, whether you're in France, England, United States, if you say a French meringue, everybody that bakes should know what that is. And they leave out a lot. Sometimes they'll leave out oven temperature. Sometimes they'll leave out baking time. Sometimes they'll leave out the steps. Like they said, make a meringue, make a genoise, they leave out a lot.
Did you find yourself noticing any difference in ingredients versus like quality wise in the UK versus the US? Like, were you like, wow, these eggs are like bright orange versus the ones I'm used to working with at home or anything like that?
Yeah, so there were a couple of differences, but they warned us about it already, like the sugar, like caster sugar versus granulated sugar. So when you say caster sugar, it's a finer sugar and it's closer to what we use, like the Domino's yellow bag. It's closer to what we use. If you were to ask for granulated sugar, you would get a much coarser sugar from them. The flours were pretty close. I didn't have any issues with that. Cream cheese was another thing, because we made rugula, which has cream cheese in the dough. And they don't have the block. They just have kind of a sort of whipped version, which is in between our whipped version and the block of cream cheese. But we were able to practice. And I didn't find any difference in it. So that was good. But the quality of the ingredients are all top notch. They do an unbelievable job. They are the unsung heroes, the kitchen crew, the culinary people.
That's cool to hear.
Unsung heroes. They source, they try their best to source specific ingredients if we want a specific brand or whatever. There was one thing was I was making I started out making a pumpkin cake and they weren't sure if they could get the Libby, pumpkin in a can for us. So they're like, bring a couple of cans with you. So I brought them over in my suitcase.
They're like, ma'am, are you trying to go over country lines for the pumpkin?
Because you don't know the consistency. One can could be a lot more watery or thicker, right? and you want to bake with what you've been working with. So, totally. But they're phenomenal.
And then that all ties back to you having to submit your recipe cards, then I assume, in terms of understanding, like, they're sourcing what you need for your specific recipes for the signature and the showstopper.
Yes. Okay. Those two. We hand in the recipes ahead of time.
How much advance notice did you get on, like, let's say it's week one, you're starting your week one challenges. At that point, do you know already what weeks 5 and 6 are going to look like? Or do you get it like the one episode's advance, so you have like just a handful of days of practice, or do you go in knowing the full schedule of showstoppers and signatures?
You go in knowing the whole thing, because you're once you're selected, then you go through a process before you even go over to England. So
okay,
that's so cool. I would probably just slather like really fresh butter all over everything while I was there. That would probably be the move for me.
Kerrygold,
yeah. Oh my god,
Kerrygold, yeah.
That's what I got.
I mean, I have a bunch of it in my fridge since I've been making croissants this week, but we can get into that later. I bought like 6 bricks of it and I was like, this is expensive.
Yeah. For croissants, you definitely want the good butter.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So anything else about the technical, or should we jump on over to the showstopper?
Yeah, you know what? I think that's it. It is a little nerve-wracking. We try and figure out what it is. Never got it right on target. But it is like a lot of stuff is left out. So you need to know techniques.
And I'm assuming because like we saw a couple people struggle with, I don't know if I'm going to have enough batter to make these 12 required crepes. I might not have all the layers. I'm assuming then that for the technical, it's like not only are you given kind of vague recipes, but the ingredients you're given just enough to make what you need to make. It's not like somebody say, well, I'm going to make a little bit more batter now. Do they give them the very precise amount so that you can't make extra?
No, there's always extra stuff on your bench.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And then like, you know, we were told that, you know, when we're in the middle of the technical, you really can't correspond with anybody, you know, the other bakers, because it's supposed to be your thing, you know. Okay. So when like Mark asked Lottie, oh, are my strawberries too thick? I was like, wow. I mean, like, and she's like, yes. And I'm like, really? We weren't allowed to, you know, they're like, you know, you really shouldn't be looking at anybody's bench. You should be focusing on your, you know.
Yeah. Well, so, I was surprised nobody was like, hey, somebody want to tell me what a crescent is or what?
Yeah, right. Like, yeah. But I remember just putting your head down and working, like not even realizing what was going on next to you.
Well, maybe that's why you were so successful, is that you were.
There you go. You're not worried about. You're only worried about yourself. You don't have to.
Right. Competing against myself.
Exactly. And I think it was series 5, which is like the one season I've seen so far, where I was like first being introduced to the technical. And I think there were a couple instances of people like, I'm glad I'm kind of seated at the back of the class, so to speak, because I can like look and see what other people are doing. And then I also appreciate the fact that they rotate. At least they look like they rotate people from station to station. So one episode, you're going to be in the back left corner. The other one, you're going to be in the middle. So I would not be surprised if there's a little bit of casual glancing around to see what people are doing.
I'm sure there is. But for the semifinals, there was 5 of us. So it was 2-2 and then me. And I kind of liked being in the back by myself. Nobody. You know, being in the front there's a lot of stuff going on in front of you, you know, just technical stuff. So it might be a little bit of a distraction, but being in the back is like the best place.
Yeah, I choose the back for most scenarios. Like, you know, listen.
Back of the classroom, back of the bus.
Yeah, like if you go to a workout class, you don't want to be in the front. Last time I went to a workout class was like 5 years ago, but still. Yeah, I appreciate like having that space to kind of like be in your own world, focus on your own stuff, not have too much chaos around you, right? That would definitely be my move if I was able to do that.
Grand Canyon University, an affordable private Christian university, is one of the largest and fastest growing universities in the country, offering more than 270 programs online. In addition to federal grants and aid, GCU's online students received nearly $130 million in institutional scholarships in 2022. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu/myoffer to see the scholarships you may qualify for.
Speaking of distractions, I feel I have to say we're 6 episodes in. I'm not feeling Matt. I am not feeling Matt Lucas.
I'm not either. And I feel bad because I want to, but the chemistry with Noel just like really isn't working for me. I'm really missing Sandy here. Noel and Sandy just had this like electric chemistry that I thought Mel and Sue also had. And I've said this many, many times throughout the podcast, is I wasn't devastated when Mel and Sue left as much as I love them and I think they're wonderful, because Sandy and Noel had that vibe that I was looking for from Bake Off. Matt and Noel are just not vibing for me, and I think it's because they're kind of cut from that same cloth.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
They're too similar.
Yeah.
And it feels a lot like Matt is like just trying to get laughs from the crew or Noel or something. I don't know. He's hilarious in Little Britain, and I'd encourage anybody to find episodes of Little Britain to check out. I think he's astounding in that, but it's all character work. Like he's never really himself. And
I feel like Noel is almost always himself, even when he's playing a character, he's himself. Like if you've ever seen The IT Crowd, it's on Netflix. It's a really great show. He plays this like goth vampire, which is very much, it's just, Noel, but like Noel to the extreme. Like, so I just, Sandy, she's always more of a host than an actual like actor or a character person.
Right. So she was herself.
Really good at that. Yeah. And same with Sue and Mel, like they were always very much like themselves and working off of that, which I thought was really effective. And I'm just not vibing with it. And I'm really sad because I love this cast and I would have let, you know, there's some moments where I think Noel tries really hard to be like that warm, fuzzy person, but it just doesn't, like when Laura was getting upset this week and he tried to comfort her and be like, hey, just please just keep going. That's really where I'm missing Sandy, because she's the one who would like give them a hug and tell them like, hey, you're going to get through this. And the same with Mel. Mel would do that a lot too. Mel and Sue would do it. And I appreciate that Noel's doing it. Just doesn't have the same feeling that Sandy did doing it. Oh, I just miss her.
And I can't picture Matt doing it.
No.
Like, yeah, so it's like, you know what? Right up, I'll even, because I have such sway over production, I'll even give him another season. I'm assuming there's going to be like many more seasons of Bake Off. Let's see if he gets some notes after season one and is able to like, you know, change things for season one. Give him another seat. We'll see if he changes or shifts or becomes more settled in. But so far, not working for me. And after all my extensive experience with the Bake Off as a show.
I'll say that on Tina's season, the hosts were Anthony Adams and Spice Girl Emma Button.
And I
thought they worked really well together. And I thought they gave the vibe that I want from Bake Off.
They did. They did. And they were, they did, you know, you, they would know when you're having a bad day and they would come over and, you know, give you a little hug or give you a little pep talk. And a lot of times it was off camera. It wasn't staged or anything. They would come by and, you know, they would even yell from the front of the room, hey, Tina, how's it going today? Good, good, good. And they were really, honestly, even off the camera, I mean, when we were like just kind of getting there in the morning and just kind of setting things up, they would come by and say, hey, how was your night? What'd you do yesterday? I mean, they were really great.
Yeah. I've only seen Mel and Sue. I've never seen Sandy.
You're going to love Sandy.
Yeah, you will.
You're really going to love Sandy.
And I think what I liked about the Mel-Sue dynamic is that they're, as hosts, they have this mix of humor and warmth. The only warmth that I get from this season of Bake Off is from the contestants. So like I said, like Noel tried with Laura and it was, he did a good job of comforting her, but it wasn't like the same way that like say Mel and Sue would. But we'll see how things potentially, we'll see. He's still got a few episodes. We'll see how Matt grows into it.
It's hard. I mean, you know, when everybody else is established and been there for a couple of years, it's hard to get into it and, you know, see where you're, you know, where you fit in. So maybe another year.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
I think like once you get more acquainted with how the show works too, and sort of the different pastries that are involved, like he's such a fish out of water, I think, in terms of just how all of this works. Mm-hmm. Like, weren't you saying, Haley, that he was like eating every cake, like the first episode or something? And then he was like, I feel sick. Like we've never seen anybody else really do that before. So, yeah, it might just take a little bit of time to kind of warm up to it the way that everybody else has.
Yeah.
But I do agree. It's like two similar personalities, whereas I think we like the counterpoint of someone who's a little bit different with Noel.
Like a good cake. We just want a good balance. We want a nice, flavorful balance. Like, I'm happy to have lemon in my cake, but I want something a little lighter to, like, floof it up a bit.
Yeah.
And then let's go on to the showstopper, a spectacular kawaii cake. So what they really wanted was just like a very cartoonish looking cake. Because I am a sucker for cute things. Like I love this, like visually, I love this challenge. I love looking at everything. If Mark's avocado cake got turned into a stuffed animal, please count me as first in line to buy that because I want it. It was adorable. I loved the pineapple. I thought that was so cute. like Dave, I'm rare to give Dave credit, but I thought his Shiva cake was so cute. And I love that adorable. He has one. So it was just like, oh. Mm-hmm. I mean, Peter's, I'm hard on Peter. I thought his was weird.
Oh, the shuttlecock. Yeah. Badminton.
Yeah. It's only because the only frame of reference I have for him and shuttlecock is him playing with his brother. So,
God. Badminton, everyone. Badminton.
Yeah, exactly. I was just saying, yeah, where did you go, Emily, with that one? All I'm saying is that there's...
I went nowhere. I'm right here. I'm fine.
Yeah, we saw him playing badminton with his brother.
With his brother.
I nearly linked the shuttlecock to his brother, and then that's why it's like Emily Fox.
I'm sorry, okay? Feeling a little sassy today. Here we are.
I did like Laura's concept.
I loved the pineapple.
I thought it was so cute. Yeah, I thought it was a really clever way of doing it.
I thought it was brilliant.
Yeah, an upside down pineapple cake instead of a pineapple upside down.
Right. Yeah.
And I had to sit there and like parse out the phrasing of those. Okay, yeah, no, I get it. It's a cake that looks like an upside down pineapple. So it's an upside down pineapple cake. I get it. And it looked good. Conceptually, it looks good. And
they liked your flavors.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like I thought flavors. This challenge for everyone was like decently successful for what we've seen this season and some of these like harder challenges. Yeah. Yeah. I thought this could have gone into left field pretty quickly. Even Marks, who they didn't like the flavor or the bakedness of it, they thought it was at least cute. Like, I thought they all looked pretty good. Hermine's didn't really do it for me. I just don't think she truly got the style they were going for.
For the whimsy of it.
Yeah.
Complete lack of whimsy. I've seen so many South Korean horror movies. That's what the cake reminded me of, like the ring. Like, I was expecting like this like woman with like black hair, long black hair over her face, like to emerge from the cake in like 7 days. It didn't remind me at all of Japan. I was like, okay, that's a South Korean horror film. I got it.
Yeah. And I love the way a lot of people did like layers in their cake, where it was like really distinct colors. So even when you cut into it, it had that also whimsy to it. I was decently surprised at how reasonably successful these were.
These were like successful versions of what you see on Nailed It. These are people who had the layer, like, oh wow, they actually have like these distinct layers, and like, oh, I see Peter like making his cake layers and then shaving the sides with the knife before he put the fondant on. Like, oh, this is what they should be, or what they're told they should be doing on Nailed It. But if they actually did, this show would not be successful. I thought there was a lot of creativity, and like, I think Tina, you said whimsy. I think that was like a key element for most of the cakes here. That was really made this a fun challenge.
I feel like, and for Lottie to win Star Baker, I'm really excited about that. But I don't remember what her cake looks like.
A mushroom.
She had a mushroom.
Oh yeah. Okay. That
and
was.
She really did like the cotton jiggle cake.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Now. Okay. Yeah. Now I remember, because every other one I have like a pretty clear picture of what it looked like. That one I was kind of like.
And that one felt a little bit more definitively Japanese, which is what Paul said, right?
Yeah.
Like, oh my gosh, I haven't had one of these since I was in Japan. So it felt like she took it an extra step versus just, you know, like we were saying earlier, Japanese inspired.
Right. Or flavors that like yuzu, you know, this was not just flavors that were inspired by Japan, but she actually went with a cake that was the part of the culture.
Right.
And for a cake that's so light, I was impressed with her ability to be able to stack it. Like, you would think that top one would like just crush the bottom.
Jiggle off.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
and hers was like her making like the little chocolate pebbles around it and some of the trees around, like her, it looked like her entire thing was edible compared to Armin, who had like the tin foil wrapped, the fondant wrapped tin foil. And I was afraid that Paul or Prue was going to
cut into it.
just like grab a branch and eat it, and then the tinfoil hits their braces or their fillings, and they, you know.
Well, they were actually at her bench when she was covering the foil, and I'm surprised that they didn't mention that. Like, oh, you know, we can't. You know, they gave her a lot of leeway on that, and usually it's pretty telling if Paul will mention something, and then it'll come back to bite you later. But they didn't. They didn't. I was surprised at that.
It's a little bit like, I think, you know, Top Chef. Oh, you're not making your own pasta. You know, it's sort of like, your entire treat isn't edible. But at the same time, it's like we've seen in previous challenges that, like, even going back to the first challenge, like Lottie made some chips to go with her burger bow. I keep calling it bow, her burger bun. It's like, and Mark's like looking at her questioningly, but it's like, I think we've seen that doesn't really factor into the judging much. It's more like a complimentary, like not nice to have. I would say frosting on the cake, but you kind of need that for these challenges. You do need frosting. But so I did it. So I'm guessing that it was more like how to accent it, and she probably wasn't going to be dinged on the trees because they probably wasn't going to factor into their judging.
Well, and I'm sure Laura wasn't dinged either, because I mean, if her pineapple head was all cake, like, I'd be super impressed, but I highly doubt it was. I feel like that was probably just like whatever PVC, maybe like covered in fondant or something.
That was the bottom part.
Yeah.
I didn't even think about that. For some reason, I assumed it was all cake, but you're right. That would have been very difficult.
But yeah, I'm truly, madly, deeply devastated to see Mark go. Like I said,
his idea was really clever.
It was adorable.
Yeah.
But like him and Laura, I feel like we're pretty even going into that showstopper, and it really could have been either one of them. But Laura went up, and Mark just it seemed like the only one who really couldn't get it done. And then so it seemed inevitable for him to go, kind of like Linda last week, where it was just like, there's really no other outcome here. I'm devastated.
And I don't know how the judging process works or points or what everything, but I have a feeling that the showstopper carries a lot of weight, that you can make up a lot of ground if you failed in the first two, but you come out with a really stellar showstopper. So,
yeah, I felt bad just because obviously he had time issues with sort of making the edges look more finished and polished and, you know, sort of shoving the pit with the baby like into the avocado very quickly as you know, time ran out. But to watch them basically look at him and say, this tastes terrible, that made me really sad. That's a really tough critique, obviously, on a food show.
And he was just like, you could tell he was heartbroken.
Yeah, he was
heartbroken with a smile on his face. And I think that's why I love Mark so much. He seems to take everything with stride.
And then he cried, and I was like, oh God, here I go too.
Did his cake have avocado flavors? Or did it look like an avocado?
I don't think so.
I don't know. I don't know what flavor his cake was.
Because I thought that I didn't think that it did. I thought it was just visually looked like an avocado.
Fondant and ruby chocolate biscuits. It had like a light green tinge to it.
There was something that Paul had said about, could it, like, during the tasting, Paul had mentioned avocado as, I thought, potentially as an ingredient or flavor.
Was it avocado oil?
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's a
good blended fat that kind of gave it a little more body and smoothness, but it didn't come through as well as it should have, I guess.
Because I know that they make like avocado ice cream, and there are some like sweets that utilize avocado. So I think it would have been interesting to play around with that a little bit. But again, that's also it's not something that I necessarily associate as a flavor of Japan.
I think you're reaching there if you were.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, it was adorable.
Yeah. We're so cute.
What would everybody else, what would you have made like for that cake?
I can only imagine I would have made some form of my cat.
Yeah, me.
Like, I would have gone with the other Mark route and like making, and Dave like making my cat. Ooh,
I would have picked a kitsune, which is a fox. Because
one.
I actually have a coaster that I have from one of the temples in Kyoto that's like the fox.
Cute.
I just realized it was right here because we always use it in this room. So I probably would have done that as a tribute to my last name. And also because it's such a prevalent sort of image in a lot of, you know, Japanese culture. So I thought that would have been cool. What about you, Kurt?
Just given my affinity for
like a sushi roll, like that would have been adorable. Kurt.
Well, see, yeah. I thought about that, but I thought that would almost be like too like
on the nose,
too on the nose.
Yeah,
very much too on the nose. And it's like I'm big into gaming, and so maybe I would have I would have done like a little like a old school Tamagotchi.
That would have been cute.
I love that.
Like an egg shell, like an egg shaped cake, but then there's like a carve out on the front that's like a window, and then there's like another cake inside that's your little pocket.
Ambitious.
Yeah, isn't it? What about
I'm all about design and not about execution, yeah. So I'll let somebody else figure out how to make it.
Tina, what would you have done?
I think the cat, some sort of cat motif would have definitely been front and center because I have three. So nice. It would have definitely. And to talk about the flavors of the cakes, I think Laura like hit all the notes that I would. She did. She had a chiffon sponge, but she had coconut and lime and pineapple, which are like some of my favorite flavors. So she really nailed it for me.
Yeah. I wonder if you could have done like. Again, not trying to be too on the nose, but could I have done like a soy or wasabi based cake that actually came out well? Emily's face for the $1 million patrons says no.
Sorry,
I think the wasabi would have been more successful than maybe the soy. I think you could have added that to like a buttercream, adding the sweetness to it. I think that would have been really cool.
Could have done like a miso cake or something.
Oh, there you go.
A little bit of kick to it.
The thing is, like, I would have wanted to do my flavor. Like, twist my arm, let me do flavor research in Tokyo and familiarize myself more with like what potential flavor. I wouldn't have wanted to go based on just what I normally associate in terms of like the flavors of Japan, because 99% of my Japanese cuisine has been sushi, and I would want to explore more kind of experiment a little beforehand to know what would be potentially a good flavor profile to include something potentially tea,
like a barley instead of a matcha
or sake.
Or sake, there you
plum.
Go.
Plum.
Yeah, plum. You could do an ume. Yeah,
yeah.
An ume.
Actually,
taste.
Yeah.
I mentioned this in our Top Chef group chat a few weeks back, but I think that the Asian pear may have replaced the blackberry. I've been like those things
love
like
blackberries.
I'm like literally rationing out my Asian pears that I got some that were the size of a grapefruit at a local grocery store.
Wow.
And it's just like so just sweet and succulent. So when I saw that Peter was putting Asian pear slices into his shuttlecock, I was like, oh, that's really interesting. But like, part of it though for me is also the nice texture and crunch of the Asian pear when you get like just a good bite of it. And, so I might have actually steered into like a plum and Asian pear sort of.
I would do like a shiso syrup between the layers or something.
What
like
is
that.
Shiso?
Shiso is an herb.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's sort of I feel like you would know what it tastes like if you've had it before, but like it's very hard to describe what it is. It grows like a weed on my balcony. It's very funny. I bought seeds like 2 years ago, and now like every
Get rid of it.
Oh my god! I kind of was like, should I start selling this wholesale to somebody because there's just so much of it? But I had shiso juice when I was in Japan last time. And it was so delicious. And like you use it with a red shiso, so it dyes the juice like a reddish, like beautiful color.
Ooh.
And, you know, I've been making shiso simple syrup for like cocktails and mocktails for Josh this whole like quarantine because I've had so much shiso. So I feel like that would be a fun flavor to kind of play around with. I don't know. There is so much more that could have been explored on this. So I think that's my disappointment.
But
it was more a miss in the name. Like, honestly, it feels like it was a big miss in the name.
Yeah.
Like these are all good challenges. It was and fun challenges. It was just clustering them together in this way with this title was like, really?
Yeah. It's a little, but I don't know. We'll see if they alter things in the future based on some of the feedback I believe they've gotten.
Yeah. Are you guys aware of what next week's theme is?
Mm-mm, I didn't know. I didn't see it.
Would you like to know?
Yes.
Sure. Yeah.
It's 1980s week.
Stop it.
That's right. That's right. I saw that somewhere. I don't know what that's going to be all about.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of like what that would be.
Like, I don't know. Like a, what are those called?
The showstopper,
like the salad with the marshmallows.
The showstopper is going to be very much, I'm guessing,
80s.
That's 80s iconic, blah, blah, blah. It's going to be another, it's going to be similar to this week, probably. But I don't, I am a child of the 80s.
Yeah,
I'm trying to think what, like.
Me too.
Hot Pockets were more 90s. create a Hot Pocket. Well, they kind of did that with the past, too. But
well, I'm thinking like for themes for the cake, first thing that comes to mind are leg warmers, headbands, top sneakers,
pants, acid wash cake,
cake cleaner.
27 miniature cube cakes to make a larger Rubik's Cube.
Rubik's Cube.
There you go. I don't know.
If Roland was still around, he would have had some device or apparatus that actually allowed the cakes to, that he made from home, that allowed the cakes to actually rotate as part of like a cube.
Make a Teddy Ruxpin cake. Like, I don't know. What do you think?
Was Cabbage Patch Dolls 80s too?
Yep.
I think so.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
But that's like foods of the 80s. Okay, yeah, please do.
Yeah.
Because I don't associate foodies, the 80s with specific foods as much as more pop culture-y, like, touch points.
Right. Yeah.
And specifically, like, fruit roll-ups kind of came big in the 80s. But they're still around, so they're not, like, definitively 80s. Gosh, it's going to be...
Upside down cake showing up for me.
Guess what?
For the 80s? That's like a 50s thing, I think.
Yeah, that's what I thought. 80s? Too. Yeah.
Did they have a resurgence in the 80s?
Maybe.
It's possible.
Yeah, none of this seems particularly, like,
and you know what?
Isolated.
Is it going to be different, like, in England than it is here, where the 80s is different? Right, so...
That's true. Yeah, I'm completely approaching this from a through a U.S. lens, and I think everything that I think of is uniquely... When I think of 1980s culture, to me, it's just so associated with the U.S., is that I didn't even stop and think, like, what does 1980s mean in the U.K.?
My list of pineapple upside down cake is from Australia, so maybe it just took a while to get there. Sorry.
Well, you know, the first thing that comes to my mind that's British in the 80s is Lady Diana.
Yeah.
So I wonder if, you know, they got married in, what was it, 81? I think something like that.
Yeah, because William is so like 37 now, 38.
So maybe we will see a princess cake again.
Maybe.
Yeah, but that's the thing, is it doesn't necessarily have to be like what's iconically 80s. It could be more like here's some cake. Key events. Here's some more sheet cake. No decoration.
Yeah.
But it could just be like here's like key events for the 80s, like the Showstopper is based around a specific 1980s event, or the Technical is more 1980s. Oh, the Technicals usually are like just iconic foods, or the Signature could be around like inspired by something that happened in the 80s. So it doesn't have to necessarily be like
the Berlin Wall coming down or something like that.
That was 90s.
That was 88.
That was 88. Reagan was still in as president, but I just looked it up. Yeah, the wedding was 1981. So. Maybe we'll see some of that.
That would be interesting. I'm looking forward to seeing.
What was November 91?
It says
I thought it was 89.
89, yeah.
Why does okay, this is confusing.
Internet. What are you looking at, Kurt? I definitely know it's 89.
Yeah. It's 89.
I'm looking at Google.
Which Google are you looking at?
Oh, it's anyway. Spelled with 1-0. Never mind. Okay, keep going.
November 9th, 1989.
Yep, that's what
Berlin,
I
mean. Fall of the Berlin Wall.
Mm-hmm.
This has turned into a completely different podcast, but I'm not letting it go.
All right. Should we go around and say what we ate this week and then we come back to Kurt?
Sure. So what did I make this week? I made a really lovely acorn squash and sweet potato soup this week. And I mixed in some coconut milk. My grandmother is lactose intolerant and I wanted to give her some soup. So I wanted to make a little creamy without adding any like dairy. And I thought it was really good with the coconut milk. I added like a touch of lime and, a bunch of spices and stuff. I thought that was great. Well, the other night we tried to make steak with like nice baked potatoes, and Ethan was going to make like a Greek salad, and then he chopped his thumb off on the mandolin. So,
oh, no. Well, he's got a second thumb. He'll be fine.
Yeah. So we got takeout that night.
Is he okay?
He's fine-ish.
Okay. Oh no, fine-ish.
I mean, it wasn't great, but he's fine. No stitches needed, but it's okay, hard to stitch what isn't there anymore. No. Sorry, content warning for those Swedish people.
I was so looking forward to thumb wrestling him when we finally met.
He can use his left thumb to thumb wrestle. And then this morning, as a nice Halloween treat, I found a bag of Ruffle chips in the closet.
Wait. Is that a treat? You found a bag of chips in the closet?
I'm not trick-or-treating. I melted some chocolate and drizzled the chocolate over the chips, put a little sprinkles on it, so I'm excited to eat those later.
Nice.
Just for everybody's edification, the Brandenburg Gate, a few meters from the Berlin Wall, was opened in December of 89. The demolition of the wall officially began on June 13th, 1990, and was completed in November 91. The fall of the Berlin Wall paved the way for German reunification, which formally took place on October 3rd, 1990.
Hmm.
Boom.
All right.
As for me, I went to a local pub and got two tasty meat pies. One was a mince and onion pie, and mince in the UK is just like ground beef, like minced up meat. That was tasty. That's very similar to kind of those turnovers that I've made using crescent rolls before. And then I got in honor of Paul Hollywood, I got a cheese and onion pie that like Laura had made last week, which was actually extremely tasty. And then I got two sausage rolls, which were basically like enormous pigs in a blanket, which were very tasty. And then I also picked up 2 pints of Jenny's ice cream.
Yes. And how were they? How were they, Kurt?
I shouldn't have hesitated like I did. They were amazing. I got the salted caramel. And I don't think it's called salted caramel. It's like salty caramel, regardless.
Yep.
Again, I want to explore more caramel desserts because
turn you slightly?
It did. Not in a good way. In a good way.
I'm on a really hard push here to get this man to like caramel.
Caramel?
Yeah.
It was good. But the brambleberry pie, cobbler, brambleberry crisp, I think it was, which is a mix of blackberries and blackcurrant. Because you're also on a blackcurrant kick with me as well, Emily. I ate the entire pint in one sitting. So those were both good.
Good.
And yeah, those were the main things I had. It was a lot of like, I'm kind of at the point where I'm going to be leaving my apartment. So I'm like not buying a lot of new food, and I'm trying to like get stuff out of my freezer that I bought like back in April for COVID when I was like that I right. don't think I like need to like store anymore. So I did this thing. I had this like a pound of chorizo that I ended up mixing with corn salad that I had after I browned it, added the corn salad, and added some, just because I love blue cheese, added some blue cheese crumbles. And it was just this like pile of like really tasty meat. I was like, do I want to put this up? No, this is fine. I'm just gonna load up on protein. And then we'll see. I'm probably gonna get some tasty sandwiches this weekend, and that's me.
Emily, what have you been making and or eating besides the croissants?
So the aforementioned croissants. I finally bit the bullet and bought the remastered Tartine cookbook about all of the pastries and the bakery itself. It's not just the bread book. But now I have fully just entered into pastry and baking generally from Tartine because I trust them so much with their sourdough. And I decided, you know what, let's just jump into it. Let's do some croissants. You know, I love a good project. I've always wanted to make some myself and I can't eat it because it usually has egg wash on it. So jumped in and did that. And let me tell you, woke up with a very sore upper body yesterday from rolling everything out. I was like, I was like
worried you had a reaction to one of the other ingredients. I was like, oh no. It was the rolling.
I woke up being like, ow. Yeah, but I used really old yeast, so they didn't puff the way I wanted them to as much. They weren't as light and airy as they could have been. So that's the next move, is to redo it, which I actually had a lot of fun doing it. So I think this is going to be something that I obviously...
Yeah,
the payoff's great. Like the lamination that I saw, I was like, oh boy, yeah.
Cool, right?
Yeah, I felt really good about it. So I did that. And I also made chocolate babka last Saturday as inspired by previous season or previous episodes of Great British Bake Off. A lot of people reached out to me and said, hey, did you watch this? And I was like, yes, guys, I'm on a podcast about it. why aren't you listening? So that was really delicious and super fun. And then otherwise, I don't know. We've been kind of jumping around through all these different cookbooks that I kind of talked about last week and cooking some really fun and interesting dishes. As a result, made a really nice homemade pasta the other night with mushrooms, and it was super delicious and very filling, especially since the weather is starting to turn so much colder now, right?
So soup and pasta.
Yeah, absolutely. I was like, let's just load it all on. Why not? That's what I did. So...
How about you, Tina? Anything striking that blows my sandwich making out of the water?
So this month is Italian American Heritage Month. So I've been doing a collaboration once a week for the month with four other ladies on Instagram. And this was our last, we did like dinner courses. So today, this week was our last course. It was dessert. So for me, for my contribution, I made a pistachio white chocolate mandarin panna cotta.
Oh my God.
I love panna cotta so much. Oh.
And it's, you know, it's a balancing act. You know, you don't want to add too much of the gelatin because it gets rubbery. So I like to make it in a glass or a ramekin where it will stay, where I don't have to turn it out. And that way you can ease off a little on the gelatin, and it's a more, you know, really nice texture. So, and then I was playing around with some recipes, using leftover Halloween candy because, you know, trick or treaters are going to be hit or miss this year.
So I made a
crispy candy blondie bar. So I take the, like chocolate covered candy, like Reese's, Kit Kats, Hershey bars, you know, even you can do mounds or whatever, chop it up, melt it. And then I mix it with Rice Krispies and I put that on the bottom of the pan. And then I make a blondie recipe and, you know, put that on top. And then I bake it and we get like a little crispy bar and you can reuse your, you know, Halloween candy. So
I love this idea.
And the recipe's on my website.
Okay, so. Yeah, checking it out. Gonna do it because either we don't have trick-or-treaters or we always eat the candy ourselves and it's not pretty at the end of every year. So. It's crazy.
We bought 12 full-size chocolate bars in hopes that
12?
That 12. Yeah. We usually have about like between 6 and 8, which is depressing. Like I live in a neighborhood. Like it's... Like, I don't know what, like, I don't know why we never get many kids. And so last year, we're like, we have full-size chocolate bars. Maybe the kids will tell their friends next year we'll have more.
I'm picturing you coming to the door, like, at a Brazilian steakhouse. You've got the candy bar held up with a knife, and you're, like, cutting, like, bits of it off onto the bags of the kids. Like, do you need more? And they're like, you want the Milky Way? You want the Snickers, and you're like, they turn over the disc so it's green instead of red. Like,
yeah, no, that's a good idea. No, we're just going to give it like the full size. A couple of weeks ago, Ethan bought like a, you know, like the thing where you do that and it grabs other stuff like far away. We bought it because we're like, we should clean up the garbage in the neighborhood. Anyways, we have.
I love that. I thought it was going to be like, we're afraid of the virus. Keep us.
Yeah, right? No. Like, we want, we were like, we should clean up the neighborhood. It looks, you know, there's trash everywhere. We have not used it for that yet. Ethan has only used it to bother me. But he thinks that he will maybe give the candy out with that.
I've seen that. Big tubes. I've seen people with really big tubes and they slide the candy through the tube into the kid's bag.
Like going to the bank.
Pneumatic tube system.
Yeah.
I guess if we were still doing like the official Top Chef Beyond podcast, this probably would have been a Halloween week. I think it's probably fair. It's like, what is everybody's favorite? Like when you were back in, when you were trick or treating, Holland, what's your go-to Halloween candy?
Like, years ago, I actually did like a candy bar ranking on the 32 Fans podcast. I'm sure if you Googled that, you could find it. My favorite, I love O. Henry. Again, like I'm not sure what we have and what you guys have.
That is, yeah.
Oh my God, are you serious?
It's okay. This isn't their Long John situation. I have had O. Henry's.
Okay, oh, they're the best. They're the best
thing. Is that what it is?
I don't know. Maybe it's just a Canada thing. Have you had it in Canada, Kurt? Or like you've had it IRL? Michigan
originally, so that's almost Canada.
That's fair. Those are my favorite. They're like nougat with chocolate and caramel and peanuts.
And close to that. Yeah.
They're delicious.
Snickers and Reese's peanut butter cups. Anything with peanuts or peanut butter.
We buy the peanut butter cups at Justin's, which is like the higher brow. Oh my gosh, it's ridiculous. Josh bought a huge box of them, all individually packaged. Like he bought them wholesale, basically. I was like, we could start our own corner store with these. And he was like, you need to get these out of here. And I was like, why did you buy a huge box of them? So we've both been like quietly kind of like snacking away at those. But I would say all-time favorite candy bar before I had the egg allergy was a Milky Way, a dark chocolate Milky Way. That thing could like literally, you know, I don't even know. I could bury myself in those. I would probably still eat one, even though it would make me sick.
I have to go with Twix. But Tina, you mentioning the peanut butter cups, I was like, wait, if that's a hard, they're right up there, like Twix and peanut butter cups. And especially with peanut butter cups, it's one of the things you can always trust Reese's Pieces, the Reese's peanut butter cups. But to your point, Emily, it's also one of those things where occasionally you go to like a high-end chocolatier, and they'll have their version of that. And then you're like, I want that as well.
I had a roommate in college whose mom used to make them and send them to us, and we were like, Tracy, make her stop. Like, we can't control ourselves.
So, wow.
Yeah. So, anyhow.
So, Tina, where can people find you on the internet if they want to follow along with your bakes and everything else you're doing?
So on Instagram, I'm the Italian Cookie, and my website is tinazaccardi.com. So it's as simple as that.
Zaccardi is two C's and one of everything else.
One of everything, like Bacardi, I guess, like Bacardi, but with a Z.
Kurt,
I am at Kurt Clark, also with two C's, but separated by an ert. I've never explained it that way before, and I don't know why I just let it now. If that confuses you, that's fine, because there's nothing really to look at right now, except you can see a picture of my sausage rolls, which sounds even worse. Yeah.
I feel like that's reserved for like Tinder or something.
If you want to see my meat pies and sausage rolls, you can follow me on Instagram at Kurt Clark.
Emily.
Yes. I am on Instagram and Twitter as Emlet, like an omelet, but with an E. Check out all the cool stuff we're working on. Doing a little bit of podcasting about movies with Josh over on the Post Show Recaps Patreon. So that's been really fun.
And you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at @8strong_. You can check out my blog, strongtakes.ca. And the Bachelorette coverage is back and in full swing. It is, you know, they said it was the most dramatic season ever. It might be. It's pretty. You know what? I rarely suggest people watch the show. If people want to know what's going on, I usually say just listen to the podcast. Don't waste your time. I think you should watch this season. It's wild. Right. It is something else. If you guys are doing, Emily, you should watch The Bachelorette. Have you considered it? You should do it.
I watched it in college, like the first round of it or whatever. And then I remember being like, I don't know if I like want to hang out with everybody who's watching it. It was more along the lines of like, do I want to commune with everybody who's doing this on a regular basis? And then it just sort of like you know, fizzled out. So maybe I'll get back into it.
I think you should. This...
I always love an excuse to talk to you. You know that.
Tina, thank you so much for joining us today and giving us the behind the scenes info. We loved having you. This was wonderful.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
All right. And until next time, you guys can pack your stand mixers and head on out.
All right.
Bye.